Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. Today, Kim Kiefer, the city manager, will give us an update on CBJ activities. Sarah Lynn Tabaknik from Aware will tell us how to nominate someone for the Woman of Distinction program. Grace Lumba will be here to talk about Thursday's Early Learning Carnival, and we'll talk to the executive director of NAMI in Juno. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Nut, music, and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indian educators in Wisconsin held 3 days of events to educate and advocate for the removal of race-based mascots. Discussion circles were held Friday at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. The event included speakers and a display on Indian imagery. On Saturday, an art day was held to make posters for a protest at Sunday's Green Bay Packers football game as the team took on Washington. Barbara Munson is chair of the Indian Mascot and Logo Task Force for the Wisconsin Indian Education Association.
It's not enough for parents to not let their children use the N-word or the R-word. It's not enough for parents and teachers to not allow derogatory slurs to be used in the classroom, or for school districts to be good citizens and eliminate Indian mascots and logo stereotypes from the school environments. We need everyone in society to work together on this.
She says there's much work being done by educators and others on the mascot issue nationwide.
People are beginning to understand this issue, and I don't think we're going to understand it less with time. I think we'll understand it more. So now is the time to make that change.
Munson says the Indian Education Association in the state has been working on the mascot issue since 1991. She says 35 schools in Wisconsin have changed their mascot, and there are about 30 left in schools today. Heavy rains have caused problems for tribal communities in the Southwest. The Navajo Nation Emergency Department reports communities in Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah have been impacted by flooding and are in need of assistance. The Arizona community of Chinle was hit hard and evacuated people from their homes. Walton Yazzie with the Chinle Chapter House says they're assessing damage and cleaning up. Yazzie says they're checking on the elderly and making sure roads are open. They're working on prevention efforts like considering a dike and meeting with residents and entities to form a response team.
So we can respond in a better way, in a faster way, and who's going to be all responsible.
In New Mexico, the state has declared an emergency after record-breaking rainfall. Pueblo communities have also been impacted by flooding. Local television news reports a shelter has been set up at San Felipe Pueblo. The Red Cross is providing aid throughout the state. Oklahoma courts are now involved in a second Native American adoption dispute involving a South Carolina couple. As Kirk Gortney with KGOU reports, the struggle over how to apply a federal law continues.
The nation has been watching to see what happens to Veronica, the Cherokee girl adopted by Matt and Melanie Capobianco in South Carolina. Veronica's father, Dustin Brown, continues to pursue custody, even though the U.S. Supreme Court said the Indian Child Welfare Act did not apply in his case. Now, an Oklahoma judge has awarded custody of a 4-month-old Native American girl to the absentee Shawnee tribe following a different South Carolina couple's attempt to adopt that infant. Her name is Baby Desiree. She was born in May in Oklahoma. The infant's biological father is seeking custody. Even though he's not Native American, because Desiree's biological mother is a tribal member, the absentee Shawnee tribe has stepped in, and the tribe was awarded custody last week. The Federal Indian Child Welfare Act was created to make sure Native American children live with tribal members. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
During this week in 1778, Delaware people, also known as Lenape, signed a treaty with the United States. They were among the first Indians to come into contact with Europeans in the early 1600s. Their traditional territory was on the East Coast, but many were forced to move westward through a handful of states. Some groups settled in present-day Oklahoma, and others fled to Canada. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. It is Monday, September 16th. The weather today is showers. It's gone from raining to sunny. Welcome to the new Southeast. It's high around 57 today. Tonight, showers, lows around 46. Tuesday day showers, Tuesday night rain showers likely, Wednesday showers likely, and then as we get into the weekend, I'm seeing rain. And the difference between showers and rain is showers come and go, and rain is our beloved rain, back for the fall. So in the studio with me is Kim Kiefer, our city manager, the city and borough of Juneau's manager. And she's here to talk about what's going on around our municipality. But before we do that, I have a question for you. So you are the manager of the city and borough, and what is your relationship with the assembly? How does this work? Do you have more power? Do you have less power? What is your relationship with the assembly?
So the nine members of the assembly are my boss. And so my job is to make their goals reality. So every year they put together their goals of what they would like to accomplish, and then they work with me, and then I work with my staff to be able to make that happen. So a lot of what I do is sort of behind the scenes that you don't see from an assembly standpoint. It's working with other departments, working with departments to look at how they can work better together, how we can provide the services. When there's complaints about city services, those come to me. Setting the direction of where we're going as an organization and working with the assembly on that direction. The assembly has two employees. I am one of them, and the city attorney is the second one.
Okay. And how many people work for CBJ?
Probably when you look at part-times and part-time limiteds and temporaries, we're probably up in the 800 to 900 employees. It's quite
okay.
A few.
And that's including all the summertime help and so on and so forth.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Wow. And you're responsible for, I mean, I know you have department heads, but you're responsible for a staff of 800 to 900 people.
Correct. And the other thing that's important is the CBJ umbrella, what the assembly oversees. So there's the piece that I oversee, but there's also the school district is part of the city. Bartlett Regional Hospital is part of the city. Docks and Harbors is part of the city. The airport's part of the city in Eaglecrest. And Docks and Harbors, Bartlett, and Eaglecrest all have their own boards that are appointed by the assembly. And then, as you know, the school district is voted on by the members, but the school district is still under that big umbrella of the assembly of the CBJ. So people think that they will sometimes be frustrated with something going on at some other entity, one of those enterprise boards. And what I usually do is redirect them back to the Docks and Harbor board chair or the director or Bartlett or wherever it needs to go to, because that take it to the level where it can be dealt with first, because I don't have any oversight over those entities.
Right. They're affiliated with the city, but
correct,
they operate on their own.
Correct.
Okay. Speaking of the school district, and that makes me think of school board, and that makes me think of voting. So I understand the absentee process, the absentee voting process opened today?
Correct.
Okay. So we have an upcoming election on October 1.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about what that's about, what's on the ballot.
So,
well, there's nothing on the ballot, but there are seats, correct?
Correct. So we've got school district openings for people to vote for, and we have assembly openings. We don't have any propositions this year, so it's just voting for school board members, and they're, the only contested race is an assembly member contested race. Johan Dibdahl is termed out after serving 9 years on the assembly, and prior to that he served on the planning commission. So when you see Johan, thank him for his years of service for the CBJ, because it's a lot of time that he has put in. A lot of Monday nights with the assembly, and a lot of Tuesday nights with the planning commission, and then all the other committee times. So it's important to get out and vote. It's a great opportunity for people that have kids to bring your kids in and walk through that process, because it's not a super long ballot this time, so it makes it a little bit easier to walk through with them and show them how it happens. And you can do that in person over the next 2 weeks for absentee voting. So if you're not going to be here on October 1st, get in and vote now. You can do that downtown in the assembly chambers Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30. Or at Mendenhall Mall, it's available Monday through Friday from 10 to 6:30, and it's also available on the weekends from noon to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. So we really want to give people the opportunity to get out and do their civic work, make those calls, fill in those little dots, have your say. This is an important time that we ask people to have their say.
That sounds great. So voting day is October 1 for the upcoming election, and the absentee voting is open now. So by all means, get out and vote, because there's people like Johan who has done a huge civic duty for the city, and each of us could do our very own. So that's great. So speaking of that, I want to talk to you a little bit about what we were talking about, the different autonomy, different boards doing different things. How is the city involved with what's going on with the Front Street Clinic? For listeners who may not know, it looked like they were going to close. A huge community action intervened. Funds were raised. It was really quite amazing. And now the Front Street Clinic that deals with Juneau's homeless population is going to stay open for a little bit more. But what is the city's relationship to that?
Right now, the city does not have any funding into First Street Clinic, Front Street Clinic. It supports their mission. It's part of the goals for the assembly to provide services for Juneau's homeless population. I am involved in meetings that are going on now to try and figure out how to go forward. What they're looking for to go forward is there an entity in town that can go and apply for the grant. It's called the HRSA grant for homeless clinics. To be able to do that, you have to have a medical provider. The CBJ, minus the hospital, doesn't have that medical oversight. For some people, they don't know that the CBJ actually provides the teen health services in the three high schools, and we're a partner along with many agencies in the community. But we don't provide the direct service. We partner with other agencies to provide those services for our kids in the school district. What they need at Front Street is somebody that can oversee the medical professionals that are there providing that service. So there's a group of people, Maria at the Glory Hole is spearheading this group of people to come together and figure out how can we keep Front Street moving forward. The community has really stepped up and said, we support this, this is important, and they've provided funding to the Juneau Community Foundation to be able to keep it open until April, which is when the grant expires, and which is the push now to try and get somebody that can take that grant if we go ahead and write it. My understanding is the grant's due out in November, and we would know by April if we got it, so that we could then keep it open after the end of April.
Okay. And as you were saying before, so you can't speak for Bartlett, because Bartlett is its own autonomous arm of the city.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All righty. And Jeff just passed me, Jeff's the producer of the show, League of Women Voters League of Women Voters is meeting this Wednesday, 7 o'clock, in the Assembly Chambers. It will also be on KTOO, and to talk about the municipal candidates. It's a municipal candidate forum, which the League of Women Voters do all the time.
Which we really appreciate them doing that every year. It gives people an opportunity to hear what the candidates have to say and answer questions across the board, so you hear the same question for everybody.
Yes, that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one more deadline that we want to talk about. What is going on with the Valley Library? I understand that there's a call for artists.
There is. It's an exciting opportunity for artists in the community to think about what they would like to see for art in the new Mendenhall Valley Library. The committee that's been formed doesn't have a specific direction or type of art that they want to see there, but what they would like to hear from the artists, what would you like to see? Give us some ideas. That deadline is October 4th. To get that information in, and you can get it in to the CBJ. If you go online to juno.org and to engineering, you'll find the information on that webpage of what needs to be turned in and the deadlines for that. So it's great. I was just at the Diamond Park Aquatic Facility recently and saw the new artwork that's in there as part of the 1% for Art, and there's some just excellent art in our facilities because of the 1%. And so it's a great opportunity to showcase Juno artists in our own facilities.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the new Mendenhall Valley Library. So where is it? Where is it in the process as far as when will it be open and where are we?
Right now, they're still working on the actual design of it. They had a design. They had an estimator say how much it would cost, and they're working out the pieces of what would be alternates when you bid it, just in case the prices come in higher than what we think. The hope is to get it bid out next March or April so that they could actually start work next summer. But at this point, until we actually get the bid documents out, that really is the starting point to be able to say when will it be open for the public.
And where's the location?
It's at Diamond Park, so it will be adjacent to the aquatic facility. So it's a great opportunity of being able to work both facilities together. So your parents can go in and drop their kids off for swimming lessons and go next door and get a book and read for a little while or catch up on their magazine reading and then go back or vice versa. So it's when you look at Diamond Park, it's an incredible mix of facilities for the 80 acres that's out there. You've got a high school, you have an elementary school, you have a running track, you have a football field, you have an indoor soccer field, you've got four softball, baseball, mixed fields, and you have an eight-lane pool, you have a leisure pool, and then you'll have a library. I think you'd be hard-pressed to look any place in the state and see that much active, passive recreation opportunities and opportunities for the community in 80 acres.
And you've got the Brotherhood Bridge. It's right there, too.
Right, exactly. You go right across the bridge, and you're on just a gorgeous Greenbelt Trail.
That's great in all weather.
It is.
That's true. Well, Kim, thank you so much for coming in and updating us on what's going on. So the deadlines are October 1 to vote.
Correct.
Absentee ballots are open now. And October 4th, call for artists for the new Mendenhall Valley Library.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 16th of September, 2013. It was on this day in 1853, Henry Steinway, who had come from Hamburg in 1849, sold his first American-made piano with a cast-iron frame, which allowed a piano to be strung with greater tension on the strings and with the bass strings crossing above the treble strings so they could be longer and make a grander sound. It's the birthday of James J. Hill, born in southern Ontario, 1838, who built the Great Northern Railroad from St. Paul all the way to Seattle. It's the birthday of the novelist John Knowles, born in Fairmont, West Virginia, 1926. His father was the vice president of a coal company, sent the boy to Phillips Exeter Academy. Knowles later wrote, "The summer of 1943 at Exeter was as happy a time as I ever had in my life." He went on to Yale. He met the playwright Thornton Wilder, who became his mentor. Knowles wrote a novel called Descent into Proselito, which he sent to Thornton Wilder, who told the young man he doubted he was actually interested in what he was writing about. And so John Knowles sat down to write a novel set during World War II, the action taking place at an elite boys' boarding school like Phillips Exeter. And that novel was a separate piece published in 1959, which went on to become an enormous bestseller. And it's the birthday of Henry Louis Gates, Jr., born in Keyser, West Virginia, 1950, literary critic and teacher at Harvard, who, in the winter of 2001, saw an auction catalog listing a manuscript by a woman named Hannah Crafts, The Story of a Slave's Life. He bought the manuscript and determined that it was written by a young African-American woman who had escaped from slavery, and he turned the manuscript into a novel, The Bondwoman's Narrative. It was published in 2002 and became a national bestseller. Here's a poem for today by Kim Dover. They're taking chocolate milk off the menu. And that's only the beginning. I hear other junk food is at risk. Brownies, pastries, name it, they're removing it. The only chance fifth graders have at happiness. The only thing I looked forward to was chocolate milk, especially after getting yelled at by Miss Panayotou. I once poured a carton over her inbox, watched the ink bleed down the equation-filled pages, blurring the names of my classmates. Never told anyone, not even Donna Nagy. And now they're taking it off the menu. What will our kids be forced to do? Will they devour each other, eat one another's faces, run across the handball court sword fighting with dry straws, wasted with desire, word just in? They're even removing strawberry milk. We never had that. I'm sure it didn't smell like the chocolate, a little sour, like yesterday's dessert. We had to drink it before it turned, when it was still cold enough that even our mittens couldn't protect us. A poem by Kim Dover, They're Taking Chocolate Milk Off the Menu, from her collection Slice of Moon, published by Red Hen Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lending Tree, where you can fill out one form and receive up to 5 loan offers at trylendingtree.com, NMLS 1136. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Observe the modern parent in their natural habitat, but don't get too close.
Easily excitable and prone to fits of neurotic rage, these strange creatures are just as likely to invite you in for a pleasant chat about your children as they are to tear you to pieces.
Perseverance Theater presents the outrageously funny God of Carnage, a Tony Award-winning Broadway hit by Yasmina Reza about the savage instinct at work within modern parenting. Playing now through October 6th. More information can be found online at perseverancetheater.org or by calling 463-TIXS.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. I am Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and our next guest is Sarah Lynn Tabotnick, the executive director of AWARE. Hi, Sarah Lynn.
Hi, Joan.
Thanks for coming in today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you are here to talk about the Women of Distinction program, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so what is it?
Well, Women of Distinction is a community gathering. It's really a celebration. 4 women are chosen by the AWARE Board of Directors to be honored at a dinner on March 1st. There's dinner, silent auction. It's catered by the Baranoff. There's silent auction. It's very festive and fun and celebratory. And the women who are honored are tasked with speaking for about 7 or 8 minutes about what inspires them, what inspires them to do the great things, to accomplish what they've done in our community, either as volunteers and or as part of their work.
That sounds lovely. And I know that I'm familiar with the Women of Distinction. People who have lived here know that it's one of those, bookmarks, social events of the year. There's a couple of them. There's actually more than a couple of them every year, and this is one of them. And it's really well attended, and it really is very festive. And you could get dressed, you could get dressed up, or you could wear your you know, extra tough obogs and just really just join in celebrating these astonishing women. But how do you come to, you said the WARE board picks the four women of distinction per year, and is there a criteria?
Yes, we look for women who have done work in the community that inspire other people, that are community builders, that work on behalf of the community and or women and children in the community.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
And this is your 18th year?
It is.
It's a lot of women of distinction.
And it's hard to choose them. In fact, part of the timing of being here today is to remind the community that nominations are being accepted until next Monday, the 23rd, at 5 p.m. So we really want the community to have the opportunity to nominate women, because we know that everyone knows an outstanding, exceptional woman who deserves this honor.
That sounds great. How do you people nominate the person that they'd like to
they
nominate?
They can call AWARE at 586-6623. They can look on our website, www.awareak.org.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
And is it a hard process? I mean, is it a lengthy application?
I don't think it's too hard. It's not simple, mm-hmm. you know, because we ask questions, because it's hard to discern between all the applicants. We generally get 15 to 20 each year. So in order to discern between them,
you need to know what those women are doing.
Yes, exactly.
And this is how to nominate that. It could be in secret. You could tell the person, or you could just do it.
Right,
so
right, right.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And then they only have to speak for 7 to 8 minutes. So it's not a huge, horrible hardship. It's a big honor, and with it is just 7 minutes that you have to speak. But, Sarah Lynn, let's talk a little bit about AWARE. So if this has been the 18th year of Women of Distinction, how long has AWARE been operating?
AWARE started in 1977 as the Juno Coalition on Assaults Against Women, and the following year incorporated into AWARE.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about the services that AWARE provides.
AWARE, as for people who may not know, AWARE stands for Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. So AWARE is the program for survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, men or women. AWARE provides prevention services as well, but any intervention services. Also in northern Southeast Alaska rural communities, AWARE provides the services. So we can fly people in if they need to come to safety. We meet with women just to talk to them. We have a 24-hour crisis line, 1-800-478-1090, that anybody can call any time of the day or night. All services are free and confidential. Someone could call, don't have to give your name. You can call if you're having insomnia and would like to speak to someone because a past or recent experience trauma is in your mind. So AWARE advocates are trained to talk with people, to listen, to be supportive, compassionate, and not to tell people what to do.
Mm. And obviously in the utmost confidentiality.
Right.
So how many people work for AWARE? How many people?
Oh, I think about 24.
Wow. Okay.
On a regular basis.
Okay. And are you looking for volunteers? Do you need volunteers to help out?
How timely is that? You know, tonight begins our volunteer training. If people are interested in volunteering,
you've said the right thing, Joan.
You know, our volunteer training we offer to community members as well, so people who just are looking for a little bit of education. The training is for people who do want to do direct service volunteering. It's a 40-hour process, meeting on Monday nights. So we start tonight at 5:30, Monday and Thursday evenings and weekends, through September 30th is the last day.
So this is the volunteering training process. So if you want to be a volunteer for AWARE, first you get trained through this 40-hour process, and then you volunteer an hour or 2 hours or whatever you could do on a regular basis.
Right. And we go to great pains, not really pains, but efforts. You know, we want to be sure that the volunteer is matched with the task that they want to do. So if they want to work the crisis line, great, and we'll provide extra training. We want people to be skilled at what they want to do and to feel very comfortable as part of AWARE.
That sounds great. Okay, and so the advocacy training starts tonight at what time and where?
5:30 at AWARE.
Okay, and where is AWARE?
I don't say that on the air. So people might want to call AWARE if they're interested in volunteering.
Okay.
Generally, people register in advance.
All right.
So if you would like to do that, please do call AWARE. Our business line is 586-6623.
Okay. And then the Women of Distinction, the deadline is a week from today. It's Monday. This is for the nomination process. The deadline is 9:23 at 5 p.m. And if you know a woman of distinction, and what do you want to talk about the criteria one more time? Just about how women who inspire people.
Women who inspire, women who work with women and children or work with our community members in some way, women who may do this as a volunteer basis or may be part of their jobs or both, women who you think of, I would like to be like her or I admire these qualities about her. In a big way.
Sounds great. Okay, from just our short little conversation, there are two people I want to nominate. So I'm going to call or check out the website and probably check out the website. That's what I do. And that website one more time is?
AWARE.org.
Okay. And what if you're a volunteer and you say, you're a person who's thinking of wanting to volunteer at AWARE, but you can't come tonight. Should they still call their number and find out what they could do?
Yes, they should still call 586-6623, and we'll get them hooked up with our volunteer coordinator and get that going.
Great. Okay. Thanks for coming in today,
Thank
Fireman.
You, Joan. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jeff.
Everybody needs someone to show them what is possible. Everybody needs someone to go as far as she can see. I need to stand upon the shoulders of giants. I need a woman who's as big as me. When I was a little bitty baby sitting on my mama's knee, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. I needed to see women who were living without limits. I needed to see women making history. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Give me Amelia, who went soaring across the ocean. Winnie Mandela, who is gonna set her people free. Judy Chicago, who breaks all artistic silences. These women leave a precious legacy. When I was a young teenager, reading my 17, I looked around to see just what the future had in store for me. Women in the fashion mags were too small for my dream. I needed to see women just as big as me. So I said, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of boldest daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. I know of women all across the nation, leading lives of courage in the face of fear and poverty. One lives in an abusive home, one raises her 5 children. Women, we need a new mythology. Now that I'm a grown-up woman living in society, I still look around to see just what the future holds for me. I still need women who are shooting like the comet, so I can leave my own starlight in this galaxy. And I say, give me a woman who can climb the tallest mountain. Give me a woman who can swim across the widest sea. Women need women who lead lives of bold and daring. Tell me their stories, they inspire me. Won't you sing? Tell me their stories, they inspire me. I'd like to tell you their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me your story, you inspire me. I'd like to tell you their stories, they inspire me. Won't you please tell me the stories, they inspire me. I'd like to hear your story.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show. I am your Monday host, Joan Pardis. And our next guests are here to talk about the Early Learning Carnival that's taking place this Thursday from 4 to 7 at Harborview Elementary School. So in the studio, we have a trifecta here. We have Erin Michael, who's a Juno Public Health Center employee. We have Bev Ingram, who is a developmental specialist with REACH. And we have Brendan Bauer, who's a nursing intern also at the Juno Public Health Center, who just came in from Ohio. Maybe not just came in from Ohio.
A couple weeks ago.
But
yeah.
He's from Ohio. So, Erin, tell me a little bit about the Early Learning Carnival. I know this is an annual event here in Juno, but tell me what goes on there.
Well, this is the sixth annual Early Learning Carnival, and it's going to be on September the 19th from 4 to 7. And it involves learning activities for kids. It provides resources for parents. It helps with free developmental screenings, hearing screenings, vision screenings. There's door prizes and lots of gifts and fun for the kiddos. So.
That's great. And when you say early learning, what's the target audience that you're trying to reach?
This is anywhere from birth to 5 years of age. So it's a great swath of children that can attend this.
Okay, door prizes and fun gifts, fun learning activities.
Yes, I've heard there's going to be fire trucks and trains and other kind of really cool swag for children.
Wow, man, you're just pulling out all the stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So Bev, you're the developmental specialist at REACH, one of the developmental specialists at REACH. So, and I know you've been doing this a long time. Tell me about the screenings that will happen there.
Yes, part of it, in the gym at Harborview, there'll be all kinds of fun activities there for hands-on activities for parents and children to go through. And then also in some of the smaller classrooms, there'll be specific developmental screenings, looking at development, also hearing and vision, to check out hearing and vision for children. So it's an opportunity, if you have a question or concern, to have an opportunity to meet with specialists and check it out with them.
And this is all for free.
And it's all for free. That's right. And I did want to mention that the Partnerships for Families and Children is this big coalition of 19 agencies with a vision that all families with young children will have access to the information and resources to support their child's development. So it's really 19 agencies who are involved in this big carnival, as well as many other activities in the community.
Okay, and so we're talking about it, everything from health to literacy to basically the whole gamut.
Yes. So like AWARES and AEYC, Alaska School Boards, Bartlett Beginnings, Catholic Community Services. So there's all of those agencies, those are just a few, will be represented here at the carnival. So you can also get information about what resources are in our community. It's pretty overwhelming for a parent of a young child. You don't always know what's out there or how to access those resources. It'll be a good opportunity to get some more information.
Okay. So this is free Thursday, September 19th, 4 to 7. The target audience is children birth through 5 and, of course, their parents. And it sounds like if you have something going on with your child that you'd like some input, this is a great opportunity for it to be free. And also, if you just want to see what is available in Juno, this is a place where everybody's going to have a whole bunch of booths. Now, Brendan, you are going to be one of the people in the booths, is that correct?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so what is your booth going to do?
So I'm working with the Juno Public Health Center, and one of the things that we decided we would like for parents and kids to do is to get their kid involved with gardening. We're going to be having some activities for the kids where they can put soil in a cup and plant a pea and decorate the little tag that goes in, you know, to designate what vegetable they planted. And then while they're doing that, we're going to talk to the parents and kind of get them involved with how to get your kids involved in gardening and learning where their food comes from. They appreciate vegetables more and that sort of stuff. And so not only is the fair just for kids, but the parents can also learn a whole lot as well.
Okay, and that's just one of many booths that are going to happen. Okay, so tell us a little bit, Erin, tell us a little bit about maybe some other booths. So there's the gardening booth, there's these private classrooms where you could have some developmental screenings if you choose, and this is all, of course, optional. This is the parent's choice. Is that correct, Bev? As far as the developmental screening.
Exactly. So not every child coming to the fair will certainly have these screenings, only if you want to.
Right. So if you have something going on that you'd like to speak to a specialist in that field, here you have a whole array of specialists.
Right. And I believe the Lions Club does they have this really fancy computer, about $10,000 worth of, that can screen vision. So they'll be doing the actual vision screening, which is a really cool resource we have in town from the Lions Club.
That's great. And then they could plant their own garden and say, okay, that is my vegetable.
Yeah, they could see it, right?
That is my vegetable. They might name it and call it their pet vegetable, like a pet rock. But, Erin, what else would be going on?
Well, they've got booths for hand-washing games, culture stamps, face painting, all kinds of different things, ring toss, all the gambit of different things that little kiddos would enjoy, lots of games, lots of hands-on stuff because of the age group to help keep their attention span focused. So just a lot of different things that they can do there.
Right. Erin's looking at a map now, and it's quite extensive, so there's quite a few things going on, and I guess this will all be at Harborview this Thursday, 4 to 7. It's all free, and it's the Early Learning Carnival. It's put on, brought to you by Partnerships for Families and Children, Best Beginnings, and a whole variety of Juno resources, of Juno companies, Juno nonprofits, Juno agencies, here from CERCH to CERC to Alaska Center for Resource and Families, Hyda Head Start. Sounds like everyone who has anything, any service to offer for young children will be there. So that's great. Well, thanks for all you do, and Thursday, 4 to 7.
They'll also be doing free car seat checks. So if you're needing to get your car seat checked, that would be an option there, too, that's not on the flyer. So I just thought I'd put that out
there. Oh,
that's
a great thing because, I regardless of how many degrees you have or how many degrees you don't have, cars, making sure that a car seat is actually doing what it's supposed to do seems to be very complex for me.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Chicago's Michigan Avenue. Glass skyscrapers, fancy shops. The last place you'd expect to see a bird that normally hides in freshwater marshes. Yet, during spring and fall migration, like millions of other birds, secretive Virginia rails pass over the city at night. That is, until they hit a building or become confused by lights. Annette Prince, director of the all-volunteer Chicago Bird Collision Monitors, tells of rescuing one of these slim 9-inch-tall birds from a busy city sidewalk.
Pedestrians in the area were walking right past it, not even noticing it, and it's a fairly large bird. So I followed behind the people, and the bird just kept walking. We were able to catch it. This bird was very confused, very disoriented, and it turned out when it was taken to the Wildlife Center that it did have trouble flying, so it got x-rays and treatment for whatever trauma it had incurred in the urban area. But to see a bird that is so elusive and secretive in the marshes, and this bird is walking down a sidewalk, it's heartbreaking because you realize that these birds can't find any direction to go. One direction there's traffic, another direction there's glass. There are predators that are ganging up on them. Some of these larger birds have groups of crows and gulls that just come after them because they're sitting targets. They're vulnerable. They're very disoriented. And it's something that we experience every day when we're downtown finding these birds in the early morning hours.
You can follow Annette to the rest of the story and learn more at birdnote.org.
The Montagues and the Capulets, the Jets and the Sharks, the Horns and the Violins. The only performance in Alaska of an innovative and provocative string and brass collaboration, Boston Brass and Enzo String Quartet, will be performing Notes from the Balcony, Romeo and Juliet in Music, 8 p.m. Friday, September 20th at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. Tickets at jahc.org, Hearthside Books, and the Jack. Sponsored by KATH. Major support from the National Endowment for the Arts. This message is brought to you by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
nobody else in the part of the night. I'd red, I'm plumb cool about I'd red, I'm plumb cool about I'd red. Balls, the good notion of the title. I'd read, I'm plumb fool about I'd read, I'm plumb fool about I'd read.
Okay, that was the Hop Club of Cowtown. They're coming to town on September 22nd. They'll be at Centennial Hall, 7:30 p.m. And this is through the Juno Arts. It's through the, you could, oh, I'm sorry, it's the Jazz and Classics. You could buy tickets at the Jack. Hertzside Books are online. In the studio with me right now is Doug Gardenberg. He's the executive director of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in Juneau. Hi, Doug.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi, Joan.
Welcome to the show. So let's talk about, it seems like NAMI has quite a few services and also quite a few upcoming classes. So let's talk a little bit about what NAMI is and then what's coming
up. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and it's a national organization with affiliates, 1,200 affiliates all across the country, and we have one here in Juneau. And the purpose of NAMI is to provide support, education, and advocacy for those living with mental illness and their families. Very clear mission, and what we do is we have a scaffolding of programs that help people living with mental illness and their families, and also educate people who are caring for someone with mental illness so that they're really better able to understand and really be true healers for their loved ones.
Okay. And then it seems that you have several different services to complete that mission. So there's this NAMI Family to Family, and this is a free 12-session course. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure, and I should also describe our role in relationship to providers. So if you go to a therapist or a psychiatrist, we supplement what they do. We're not a direct service provider. So we have found, really, since NAMI started in the 70s, that peer support is tremendously helpful for people in recovery, for people dealing with the challenges of mental illness. So everything we do is really peer-to-peer. Family to Family is a signature program. It's been listed as an effective practice by the national federal government in helping people and families who deal with mental illness. It's 12 weeks of learning really the essentials around about diagnosis, medications, treatment options about the brain, the causes of mental illness as far as we know today, and also support issues like how to communicate with a loved one who has mental illness, who is, say, suffering from depression, how to support yourself from self-care, how to advocate, all those related issues. So it's really 300,000 people have taken this class across the country. So it's and we have locally trained people who teach it.
Okay. And when you're talking about family to family, are you saying that people who have already walked this walk are sharing their experiences? Is that what that is?
Yes. And it's for family members. It's not for the person who's living with the mental illness. It's for family members who are caregivers. And because I myself have gone through that, having a child with mental illness, it's a very confusing, long way and path. And people need support, and so NAMI has this wonderful model of support and learning how to walk that long path, and that's really the essential value of the class.
Right. It definitely sounds like support for the caregivers
right.
and the people who are impacted, the family.
Whether right.
you're a direct caregiver or you're just a family member, or, I mean, I guess every family
or
member
any, or
be,
a friend,
right.
or a friend. And it can be, it's not just a child, or it could be a spouse, it could be a parent. Any significant relationship. And look, you know, 1 in 4 people in our country have mental illness at some point in their lives. Some have it chronically. It's a very pervasive issue. And a lot of people living with it or affected by it don't know that there's support out there. So this is really what NAMI does. This is a wonderful program. I just trained to be a teacher, and I'll be teaching in the winter. But Marsha Bennett's the main teacher, and she's an excellent teacher.
Okay. Yeah. When does the class begin?
It is beginning on October, Wednesday, October 2nd at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center from 6 to 8:30. It'll run, I think, actually 11 weeks, except for, I think, one Wednesday where there's Thanksgiving. And it's free, and you should. There's lots of posters all around town now, but you can go on to the NAMI website, www.nami.namijuno.org. You'll see information on that, or you can look us up in the phone book.
Okay.
And sign up for the class.
All right. And then that number is 463-4251 if you need more information.
463-4251.
Right. And it seems to me like what you're saying is one in four people in the United States or
probably, you know, mental illness is a cross-cultural, cross-national phenomenon. And so it's what's beautiful about NAMI and being in the United States is that the peer support that NAMI provides is really peerless. You know, there are a lot of other countries that and you have a loved one with mental illness. It's a much more desperate situation. Here, there is possibility for support and networking, finding out information that can optimize your help of the loved one with mental illness.
Right, just like if a loved one, hopefully this would never happen, if a loved one has cancer, you would go to a cancer support troop.
Right.
You would say, okay, there's somebody that I love that has mental illness and I need to some help navigating this path.
Right, and because there's so much stigma around mental illness, it's especially important because families that have a loved one with mental illness often feel very isolated. And that's why we have also support groups that we're starting at the same time. That we have support groups for families. That's sort of really, you go and you really talk about the issues you're dealing with right at the present moment. Or just, you know, again, it's a long road, and so people can talk to each other. You build relationships with people going through similar things.
Right. So that's different than the 12-week course. The family support groups, seems like they happen the first and third Thursday evening of every month, 5:30.
Well, there's two, that's the first and third Wednesday, yes, that's correct. And so you wouldn't. It's a different need. It's sort of immediate, you know, just sort of ongoing, wanting to build, you know, find support for the issues of daily living and supporting someone with a mental illness. But I would like to emphasize, too, because I've mentioned two family programs, that we have a program for people living with mental illness that's reviving after a number of years called NAMI Connection, NAMI Connection Recovery Support Group. And that's for people who have depression, who live with depression, who live with schizophrenia, who live with anxiety disorders, who live with any type of mental illness, who really want a peer support group. And the people who are leading this are people living with mental illnesses who are in recovery and are wonderful, just very lovely, special people who have been trained to lead this group. So anyone out there is, and I know there are plenty of people out there with living with mental illness, this might be a very, very special group to come to. It's free also.
Okay. So I'm going to do a roundup here. So there's there is the family-to-family program, which is a 12-session course that starts, the fall session starts Wednesday, October 2nd. It's from 6 to 8:30 at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center, and that takes place ongoing until December. Then there's the NAMI Connection, which is for people with mental illness to go in and have a support group. And that's the second and fourth Tuesday, and that is going to be at the NAMI Juno office, which is 9000 Glacier Highway, Suite 201, and that starts October 8th. And then there's a family support group.
Right, and that's NAMI Family Support Group.
And that's the first and third Thursday evening of every month, and that starts October 2nd. So to find out more, you could go to NAMI Juno, NAMIJuno.org, or give the center a call at 463-4251.
Yes.
That sounds like a lot.
That's a lot. A lot of things happening.
Indeed. So, and then there's one more thing you want to talk about. What
sure.
is that?
Sure. We also do outreach to all sorts of communities, and we all have a special program of outreach to faith communities. Many people have mental illness, are active members in churches and synagogues, and because of stigma associated with it, they're afraid to talk about it, or people are awkward about it. So we're doing some outreach to in Juno to faith communities. We're talking about the issues of mental illness and how to support congregants with mental illness, just more mental illness awareness and stigma busting, we call it. And so we're doing three presentations, one in Douglas at Sukkot Shalom, Synagogue Sukkot Shalom, and that's this Sunday at 4 o'clock. It's really open to the public, but we wanted to have it in that area so people didn't feel like they had to drive too far. And then there's going to be one on October 10th at the Lutheran Church in the Valley, and I don't have the information specifically, but that'll be October 10th, and there's one on October 22nd, so at Resurrection Lutheran Church here in town.
Okay, and all of these events are open to...
Absolutely. Open.
Anyone. It's not like, oh, this is for this.
Right.
Sector.
We put them regionally only to make it more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in any faith community, we know that people in various faith communities will be getting flyers and announcements about it. But our website has all this information at www.namijuno.org.
And It's called FaithNet. It's FaithNet.
Right.
So at the FaithNet for reaching out, there'll be people from all different denominations running
right.
the group as well?
Well, the one at the synagogue on Sunday, this is the 22nd at 4, it's going to be led by myself. I'm a rabbi, but Reverend Sue Belita from the Resurrection Lutheran Church is going to be presenting with me.
Oh, great.
And so there'll be other clergy from different faiths presenting. We have a wonderful PowerPoint presentation and also discussion. We think people find it very helpful.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and telling us about all your fall classes. There's three. And also about these upcoming series of events with the FaithNet program, reaching
right.
out to the faith communities. And also thank you for the stigma busting. I think
sure.
that, you know, I think it's less than what it was, but I think there's probably still a very long way to go. And you, of course, know more than I about that since you're a professional in this area. But thank you so much for coming. We're going to have to take a short break and then we'll be right back.
The Juneau World Affairs Council presents Six Continents on One Bicycle with Dr. Steve Fabes on Wednesday, September 18th at 5 p.m. in the Egan Room at Centennial Hall. Fabes is a medical doctor, freelance writer, a photographer, and an adventure cyclist. 3.5 years and more than 30,000 miles later, Steve has arrived in Alaska and will share the story of his journey through 43 countries on five continents. This event made possible by support from Greens Creek, Sea Alaska, GCI, and Wassman & Associates. That's Wednesday, September 18th, 5 p.m. at the Egan Room in Centennial Hall. JWAC, bringing the world to Juneau.
Hello, this is Juneau Afternoon. I've been your host today. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show. The weather today is showers. Tonight, showers. Highs around 52, southeast wind 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, rain likely, lows around 45. Wednesday, rain likely. Wednesday night, cloudy, chance of rain, lows around 47. Thursday through Friday, rain. Thank you for joining us. Martha Moore will be here tomorrow to host Juneau Afternoon. And KTOO... we broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Switzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, KTTOOBT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871, and we're also live at KTOO.org. Thanks for joining us.